Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Wine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with world high stakes golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever changed your mind about something? Well, I change my mind all the time, and I'm sure all of you do too. Would you like to learn more about how to make big changes, really, really big changes in your life? Tell me, have you ever wanted to know how you can determine what you truly, truly want out of life? That's a tough one, isn't it? Can you imagine struggling with something, then giving up on it, totally just giving up? Do you know how to deal with the fear of failure? And when was the last time you heard about a fabulous book, The Ultimate You, Achieving Greatness? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for tonight? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful, how to achieve greatness? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire. He will provide us with wonderful, inspirational, and informative lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.6 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest tonight. He was the founder of Success Minded Coaching and Consulting and the accidental author of two books, a filmmaking book called Just Shoot It and a success book, The Ultimate You, Achieving Greatness, both of which he never set out to write. His dream since early teens was to be a stand-up comic. He grew up about as far from Hollywood as one can get in Litchfield, Illinois, a small farming town in central Illinois. From his early teens, he loved watching comedians and soon began writing humor. What could be better than making people laugh? He spent high school and college years writing and finally went on stage while in college. After graduation, he was working in St. Louis in the aerospace business as an engineer and performing stand-up comedy at night. He then took up for Hollywood after finding an aerospace job in L.A. He started hitting the L.A. comedy clubs and, like most comics, hoping to land that sitcom or film deal. He also had an agent and was going on auditions. He realized he needed to make his own opportunity, so he started writing film scripts and learned all about filmmaking, working as a crew member. The next logical step was to make his own films. He has now made several films, which led to his accidental books. I am pleased to welcome to the show Curtis Kessinger. Hi, Curtis. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, January. I am great. It's great to be on here with you.
Well, you are a stand-up comic, and I've had several stand-up comics on the show. I love interviewing comics. What a brave thing to do. I'm in awe of people who can get up and do stand-up, or people who can get up and do improv. And most stand-up is sort of like improv, isn't it?
It's, you know, there sometimes, I mean, a lot of improv, people think it's improv, but there's a lot of practice that goes on beforehand. So it's a lot of it is set, you know, there are set pieces that people do, which when we did improv, unfortunately, we didn't do that.
Okay.
So we would literally take, you know, people take things from the audience, and we never know who was going to show up, which members were going to show up. So ours was really improv, and a lot of times it wasn't very good.
Uh-huh. Well, tell us about what it was like growing up in Illinois. Were you the class clown?
You know, I wasn't really that Jerry Lewis kind of out there crazy guy. I was more of the type of guy that would throw a comment, you know, quietly behind the scenes and get people to laugh in class, and then, of course, they would get in trouble because the teacher didn't hear what I said. So I was the instigator. I was more of the quiet comedian and lurking in the darkness.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was – go ahead.
I mean, I was just saying it's an interesting thing because most of the comedians and stand-up people that I've interviewed, just like you, most of them have not been the class clowns that kind of are sitting back – taking it all in. I kind of think it's kind of like when you watch Jerry Seinfeld, how like he was kind of observing everyone and
right.
then making his comments.
Exactly. And that's the kind of humor I had and you have to be able to just step back, kind of get off the merry-go-round, so to say, and watch what's going on to observe it. So you tend to step back out of the scene a little bit and watch people and just see, try to relate the normal things that everybody does that they really may not realize they do.
And make clever observations. I love it. Now, when you started out, tell us about what it was like struggling to get into show business, to become a comic.
Well, it's when I started, the first place I ever got up by myself was in St. Louis. And let me tell you, I've never had my knees shake like that in my life. And I was very well prepared, but you think about it, you're going, what am I doing? I want to walk out here in front of these people. They know that I'm supposed to make them laugh, so they're really expecting more than just normal laughter. And so, you know, you walk out there, and the lights hit you, and you're like, oh, my goodness, what did I do? It's one of the scariest moments of my life, you know. I mean, there aren't many things that are much scarier than that first time walking out there. And you hope that you have a small crowd so that at least you won't be eaten by too many people.
Now, how long was your routine that you were going to do the first time?
Normally when you start out, they'll give you 5 minutes.
Five minutes, wow.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a very long time, but when you're standing up there, you're like, boy, this seems like an hour.
Especially if people aren't laughing.
right. That can be the longest 5 minutes of your life. So you hope that you're glad they didn't give you 10 minutes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you just work your way up from that. And I started performing around St. Louis, and it got easier each time. But you try to, you know, your material grows, and so you're constantly trying out new things, and you're kind of back in that spot where, like, I don't know if this is going to work or not. I hope it does.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're writing all your own material, right?
Right, and that's one thing I think is the difference between musicians and stand-up. Stand-up, you're always writing your own material, whereas most musicians, you can get on stage and learn other people's music and be a cover band and really get some good experience before you have to start writing your own material. Stand-up, boy, you're getting tossed out there for the first time with your own stuff, and it can be quite the scary time, so...
Now, you started out with one goal, which was working in the aerospace industry, and
right.
then you switched to entertainment. What did you learn about yourself that caused you to change direction, and how old were you when you made this big change in your life?
Well, the interesting thing is I started writing stand-up as a teenager. I was probably 13 years old, and I just started kind of observing the funny side of things. And so...
Uh-huh.
I mean, if I went back and looked at all my college engineering classes, my notes, you would see comedy in the margins of all my notes. So
okay.
Half the time I wasn't paying attention in class, I would think of some comedy bit, and I'm writing, well, I should have been paying attention to calculus. So, but I think by the time I graduated college, the engineering, you know, it's kind of like, well, I accomplished that goal of getting a degree. I'm okay with not really doing much engineering-wise, even though I did, continued on. But the stand-up was always there, and I wrote for many years before I ever got up on stage. And then I soon took off for Hollywood, of course, trying to hit it big like a lot of people do. And at that time, there were only two comedy clubs in Hollywood that you could be seen in. That was the Improv and the Comedy Store. So you had to get into one of those clubs. If you didn't get into one of those clubs, nobody was going to see you.
How did you get in there?
Well, that's the thing. I could never get past those two clubs. I couldn't get in, and that's one of the reasons I think I switched goals. I ran up against, getting into one of those two clubs because everybody in the country wanted to be there. And also shock comedy kind of started to come into play. Some of the comedians that were more into shocking type material, which I was never going to go that direction. So I realized, hey, I need to put myself in a position where I can take control. And that's something that when you're an actor or even just as a writer, you're still relying on somebody else making the big deal happen up here. It's something that I think a lot of people, they want to be more in control of what happens to them on a daily basis. So you tend to look at another goal. And in the stand-up, I realized, I don't think I really want to go spend all my time on the road hanging out in these clubs. And it just, I realized, I don't think that's what I want. The writing is what I really like more than actually doing the performance part.
Isn't that interesting? And so many people, once they have the courage to change direction, somehow they find out that they really are doing exactly what they need to be doing.
Right.
What can people do to determine what they truly, truly want to do? Do you have any hints to help people?
I think you really have to start out with what are you interested in doing? Not for a job. Don't think of it as a job, because if you ask people, what do you want to do? Well, I don't want to do it. No, think about what you like to do that you do now for free that makes you happy, just the things, and then try to look at those interests. You know, write them down. Look at those interests and then start to think, okay, is there a way that I could possibly make money doing this? I mean, especially now with the internet. I mean, there's so many more opportunities to find those groups that are interested in the exact same things you are. That it's just opened up the whole world.
Absolutely, I know it's amazing. When I look back, my first book I wrote 20 years ago, and it was such a difficult thing to do. And now you can pretty much do ebooks within 2 months and get them out there in front of the public. You can bypass all the traditional difficulties. It is a wonderful time to do creative things. Now, the entertainment business is just full of rejection. How did you deal with that rejection personally?
I think it took me a while, especially when you're going on an audition every day and you're getting rejected every single day. It's like a job interview. It's like a job interview, and you know, you get turned down every day. Year after year. So it can really, I think that's probably why you see a lot of people with alcohol and drug problems, because it's such a severe thing to have happen daily. It's tough to deal with. But you have to look at it as, hey, this is not personal. It's business. You know, if you can get past the fact that maybe this isn't about me as a person, because they don't know me personally. I'm going in there. They know what they want, and if I'm not exactly that, then, you know, that's okay. And you get used to it somewhat, but still it can be tough. And it's good to have other people that you can talk to about it, too.
Yes.
You know, don't keep it inside.
Right. That's so important. You know, we're going to take a break and hear about your host. And when we come back with Curtis Kessinger, we're going to be talking about his wonderful book, The Ultimate You. And we're going to talk about wanting to give up and how someone keeps going. We'll be right back with Curtis Kessinger. Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable, someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems, people who fearlessly shared their stories, people who have priceless personalities. I've been fortunate to host a talk show called January Jones Sharing Success Stories, and it's been my privilege to interview hundreds of guests. In my new ebook, we're talking about people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, and even polygamy. Then there are my guests dealing with physical struggles such as blindness, cancer, and birth defects. All of my guests have been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. I look forward to sharing them with you in my new ebook, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones. The introductory offer of $4.99 is now available at Amazon.com. Order it today. Welcome back with another wonderful priceless personality, Curtis Kessinger. And he's sharing with us the struggles that he's gone through to find his career, the changes and the goals that he's had to switch direction. Tell us, Curtis, did you ever want to just give up?
Pretty much every day.
Okay. Gotcha.
No, you do. I mean, it's so easy, you know, it's so easy to say, that's it. I'm not putting up with any more of this. I've had it. But if you really are interested in something, you just can't give up, right? It's always in your mind. It's always mm-hmm. there. So you just have to keep trudging along and just realize that, hey, this is worthwhile. I've got to give it my shot, you know? And so
now,
you don't give up.
How did your family, did they support you on this? How did they feel about you giving up your aerospace career?
Well, my family is, especially my parents, very conservative. You know, I mean, we had six kids in our family, so it wasn't something you just quit a job or, you know, you just pursue, especially the entertainment business. That's as far out as you can get from where I'm from, you know. So it's something that you just have to keep. You kind of keep it under wraps. You do. Sometimes you're afraid to tell people what your ideas are because they say, you know, other people can be your hurdle. They can talk you out of doing something. So you really have to just be very tricky in how you relay that information to certain people.
Right. Absolutely. I can relate to that totally. If anyone who's done anything artistic, every time you do it, there's fear of failure. And it's one of the biggest things you have to overcome. How did you overcome it?
Well, I think the thing I really realized is that if I don't try, then I'm failing. And it's not one big event. You know, because I didn't try, so I didn't fail. But no, over the course of your life, you're going to look back after 30 years and go, wow, I can't believe I didn't try. You know, I failed because I didn't even try. So I kind of look at failure as education. It's temporary. If I fail today, then I have to learn why. I have to analyze it a little bit and say, why did I fail? What can I learn from this so that tomorrow I go at it again, but I'm coming from a better place. I know more than I did yesterday.
Now, what do you tell people? What do you tell those people who are out there stuck in their daily struggles? You know, the people working in the aerospace industry, they have a day job, they have a mortgage, they have a family. They can't just quit their job and start over. What do you tell them so that you can encourage them to take that first step?
Yeah, and one first thing I do, it gets kind of back to those interests. What do you really like to do? And and I tell people, list everything you would like to do, financially, your relationships, your health, your leisure. What do you like financially? You know, give me a list of what you think. You want to make more money, right? That's a goal. What do you mean? Get detailed with it. So make a list of what you want and put the details down there. And a plan. You have to have a schedule. If you don't have a schedule, then you really won't take action. So you've got this list of, let's say financially, your goal is to make $12,000 more per year doing something you love. Okay, that's, you know, you look at $12,000, you go, wow, that's pretty big. I don't think I can do it. I'm not going to try. I'll fail. Well, let's narrow that down. That's $1,000 a month. Now that seems a little more reasonable. Now keep bringing it down until you get down to what you can do on a daily basis. What action can I take today? Because now I only need to make, $33 a day? That seems more reasonable. That I can do. You know, that $12,000 is a big goal. Bring it down to a small daily goal so that you take daily action. And that's what you have to do in all areas of your life, I feel. Plan out each day.
That's such great advice. You know, when I started my radio show, I now have over 1.6 million listeners, and I can remember telling one of my sponsors that my goal was to get 1,200 listeners. And that was for the year.
Wow. And that's a big, and you thought, wow, that's a huge goal, right? 1,200. Yeah. How am I going to find 1,200? And now look at you, you're, whew, you're getting 1,200 a minute.
I look back on it and I thought, what was I thinking? I had no idea. I had no idea. And I also agree with you. It's so important to find your passion, to find something that, as you said earlier, you would do for free. Because once you find your passion, it's no longer work. It's something that you enjoy, something you look forward to. And I know it's hard to do, but if you take the money out of the equation, sometimes things get easier. Don't you agree?
Yeah. Oh, I agree 100%. The money, chasing the money will only lead to trouble. You know, it really does. And you really have to find out what you love to do, because right now you're doing it for free. You might be able to make a living doing it, but it won't be work for you. And that's the whole key, is to find what you really, really will pursue and break that down into a daily step so that you each night before you go to bed, you go, okay, how far did I get today? Okay, what am I going to do tomorrow? Plan out tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm a great one. I have a book on my desk, and every day I write what I want to do the next day. And then when I look at it in the morning, I cross things off as I get them accomplished. If I don't get them done, I move them over to the next day. Now, these years, you're going back to produce your first stand-up comedy album. Now, what has brought you back to stand-up comedy?
Maybe I bumped my head. I'm not sure what happened.
Your passion.
It is. I mean, it's still there, and I never stopped writing. I have not been on a comedy stage in 15 years, but I never stopped writing it. I never stopped writing. And what I do is I keep folders on all the scripts that I've got, all my ideas. I've got separate folders, and I had a stand-up folder, and a year ago, I looked at it, I'm going, oh, my gosh, I've got hours of material in here that's still relevant. And so I thought, I know how to make a film. I can shoot. I can do this whole thing myself now. See, that's one of the differences. And then, of course, now that we talked about the Internet, the delivery of the content, I don't have to rely on anybody else to produce it, to distribute it, to put it up for rent on Amazon, for put it on Netflix. I can do all that myself without anybody in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that's part of it.
That's fantastic. And, you know, I found myself, even in a much smaller level, I was able to produce my YouTube commercial for my new book all by myself. And these things can be done. All you need to do is take the time to learn how, and I'm much older than you, Curtis, but if I can do it, anyone can do it. Now, you call yourself an accidental author. I love that.
I never, ever set out to write a book. I will swear to that a million times. I never set out to write a book. And what happened is when I was going from just writing the scripts to learning how to make films, I read filmmaking books. I volunteered on shoots, did every job on a shoot. I would ask questions, and I would, I kind of developed my own material for how I was going to shoot my films. And then a couple friends of mine were going to make a film, and I thought, hey, here's my notes. You know, 200 pages of notes that I've taken over the years. And also they're looking at this and thinking, you know, you've got a book here.
Wow.
And so that's how I kind of became the accidental author. I thought, you know, maybe I do. And I started to pursue that goal. When somebody else, they planted that seed in my head, and it started to grow. So.
Oh, that's great. You know, my seed for my first book was planted in my head when I was in my 30s. And I had gone to an event, and the psychic told me, you're going to write a book.
Wow.
And I said, oh, really? And I said, when? And he said, when you're 50.
That's great. That is fantastic.
And guess what? My first book was published the year I was 50. And this subliminal seed that he planted took root and things happened. Let's share with our listeners the title of your books and where they can get them and your website.
The title, first my website for the filmmaking book. The filmmaking book is called Just Shoot It. Mm-hmm. And I gave it that title because I wanted to make a motivational filmmaking book, something that would give people not just the art, the craft part of it, but I wanted to give them the drive to do it as well, to get them over the hurdle. And so I included some of my early success, processes I follow into that book. So I really tried to write it with, you can do this, okay? Here's what you have to do, boom, boom, boom. And I have a website called filmschoolnow.com, which I use for that. It needs to be updated, by the way, but it's still there. And I have articles on there on writing and directing and things like that. So it's got more than just the book there. And then the other book, what I did once I did the filmmaking book, I started teaching filmmaking to people online. And so then it started to drive me towards the coaching, and I started the coaching site called successminded.com. And the book then that I, which pushed me into my next accidental book, which was called The Ultimate You, Achieving Greatness. And both of those I've got for sale on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, the normal online outlets.
Wonderful. And they're available at your website, too.
Yes, and I've just got the links through to Amazon on there.
Amazon,
so.
Yeah, that's what I have too. Now, are your books in Kindle form?
Yes, they are. Yes, they
Wonderful.
Are.
That's music to my ears because that's the only thing I can read these days.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
Well, becoming an accidental author is very exciting. And were you self-published?
Yes, there again, I ran into hurdles trying to get publishers for my books, especially the filmmaking book. I found the people that are pretty much the tops in that industry as far as entertainment. And the gentleman asked me, he said, have you read all of the filmmaking books that I have right now? And I said, no. I mean, he has well over 100. And I said, I was being honest. I don't have that kind of time.
Or I need a life.
Yeah, and he kind of, alluded to the fact that, well, A, you're not going to make any money because I'm going to spend this much marketing the book, but you'll have a book out there. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound very encouraging. So I said, I'll just self-publish this myself. I've been doing all this other stuff, on the road, so I'll keep going forward. And I just put it out there myself, and off we run. Yeah.
Yeah, good for you. You know, this is exactly what Mark Twain did many, many years ago. And I have done self-publishing, and I've also been involved with a New York publisher. And I'll tell you, I would recommend self-publishing because guess what? You get to keep the money.
Exactly. Why would you just want to put something out there and not receive anything?
Right. We're going to take a break and hear from one of my sponsors, and we'll be right back with Curtis Kessinger.
Could your commute or daily exercise routine use a boost? When was the last time you really got the giggles? June is audiobook month, and the producers of Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook, invite you to tune in, turn on, and let loose a few good laughs. Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook is about a marijuana enthusiast named Blue McKenna who gets involved in a reality TV show as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. A conglomerate of kooky contestants invades the polygamous community of Naval, Utah to compete in a reality show called Yikes. Things get sticky when Blue McKenna's hemp garden is ignited during an ill-fated seance. Find out what's going down in the desert in Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook. This is Adele Park inviting you to celebrate Audiobook Month on the funny side. Visit www.yikesaudiobook.com. That's www.yikesaudiobook.com.
I highly recommend both of Adele's books, Yikes and Jitters, especially if you're taking a road trip. Buy these audiobooks, put them in the car, and your time in the car will fly by. I'm coming back with Curtis Kessinger, and he is the author of The Ultimate You, Achieving Greatness. Now, the main topics in your book are mindset, management, and marketing. Let's talk about mindset, Curtis.
Well, to me, mindset is the most important because everything starts inside of you. You know, it all happens in your mind. The ideas that you come up with, your fears, they're hiding up there.
Yeah.
Your roadblocks, everything is up here, right? Both sides. So you can be your best friend and your worst enemy all by yourself. You don't need anybody else. So it really starts there, you know, and your belief system is up there. And a lot of your beliefs probably didn't come from you. They came from your parents, your friends, your teachers as you're growing up. And that's one thing I like to have people do is write down all your beliefs and then start to look at them and say, are these really still my beliefs? Do I really believe in all this stuff? Because you kind of develop your comfort zone over what you believe in. And a lot of times to be successful, you have to get out of that comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
You might have beliefs that get in your way.
That's so true. Now, what about management? What suggestions do you have to help our listeners manage their success?
I think management, a lot of it deals with how you manage your life, especially your daily, because I really get down to having daily activities and daily plans, and
mm-hmm.
especially with time management, because there's only 24 hours in the day, and we really...
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to be distracted now, especially with the internet, with texting, email, all the television game playing, whatever. It's so easy to be distracted that you really have to sit down and analyze, okay, what do I do on a daily basis? And I uh-huh. when I'm coaching people, I tell them, the first 7 days, I want you to write down every single thing you do every minute that you're awake.
Oh,
if
wow.
If you sneeze, I want you to write it down.
Okay, gotcha.
Because it's so easy to just go, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
Uh-huh.
But when you add that up over a day, it usually comes to several hours.
Oh, yeah. Just deciding what coffee I'm going to order take up half the day.
I don't want you to become a robot, but you know you just need to become aware of how you live and how your day goes, so that you can find that extra 30 minutes or hour a day that you need to try and move forward. And even
do you suggest people have a rigid schedule or some kind of a schedule for their work day?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we all go through a process, right?
Uh-huh.
I get up. First thing I do, I let the cats out. You know?
Yeah, okay.
You do the same routine, right? Then I shave and I shower and then I eat breakfast. But in what I try to get people to do is you've got to get out of that habit a little bit to change. All you have to do is interrupt that habit one day. I mean, if you take a different route to work, suddenly you feel different. You're like, oh, wait a minute, something's not right here. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can change your habit a little bit, you start to realize, wow, I've interrupted things and things are different, and it brings on a different feeling. So
okay.
I try to get people to interrupt their life a little bit.
Well, that sounds exciting. I like that a lot. Now let's talk about marketing. And boy, that is such a big topic, especially now, as you said, with the internet, with YouTube,
yeah.
Twitter, all these social networks. Sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. And you look at the big marketing, you know, agencies and the big people that really spend, you know,
mm-hmm.
hundreds of millions of dollars marketing. They're having their own troubles because television used to be it. Radio, those were really the only two media, even some direct mail. But now we get so much mail that we don't pay attention to that anymore. I mean,
yeah.
To me, direct mail is still a way if you use postcards, something that people don't actually have to open.
If they
have to open something, it's going in the pile over there for later.
Yeah, I know. I do that every day. I go to the mailbox, and if it's obviously an advertisement, I throw it away. I never even open it.
Yeah. And the internet, everybody's trying to figure out how to capture the Facebook people. You know, that's so they're really grasping at straws, I think, on trying to figure out, boy, how do I market now? It's a whole new ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the YouTube opportunity. What's your thoughts on that?
I think YouTube is fantastic, and that's something that – but you still have to direct your marketing somewhere. If you just toss it on YouTube, I think they're adding, what, 48, 50 hours of video a day or some mm-hmm. wild number like that. It's astounding how much video is on
yeah.
there. But you still have to be able to send that link of your video to people. You have to get them – you still have to go after your market. And mm-hmm. you know, the Internet, all the groups that you want to find, you can find them. You can find them, whether it's a filmmaking group or whether it's you love butterflies, so you got to go find that butterfly group. They're there. And if you've got something on YouTube, then you can send them the link to your butterfly group and boy or your filmmaking group and get them to hopefully click on and watch.
Where do you find these people, Curtis?
If you just go to yahoo.com and put Yahoo groups, you know, mm-hmm. whatever your subject is, if it's filmmaking mm-hmm. groups, you just plug that in and you'll find thousands of filmmaking groups all over the world. I get emails from people and I have contacts in Africa and Indonesia and in it's Europe. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what the Internet has done as far as marketing and being able to find those people. So you can find the groups no matter how strange that group may be. You can find it by searching.
Yeah. What about LinkedIn? Do you ever use that?
I do use it, but to me, it's more of a more professional related, I think.
Uh-huh.
And if you're, I do make contacts on there. I've got a few on there, but I haven't used it as much as I've used some of the groups where people are communicating and asking questions. LinkedIn, mm-hmm. I looked at as more of a, almost like a resume, source.
Mm-hmm.
These are such good
suggestions for people out there who are interested in becoming successful, achieving greatness. Now, when you're talking about achieving greatness, what do you mean by greatness, Curtis?
The main thing I really, really meant was that going after what you want, but really helping other people. And that's why the book cover, I have two rock climbers. One rock climber is reaching down to help the other person up. And that's something that, I think you can really get a lot of happiness from helping someone else who, just even if you're just providing them with an answer to a question they have. You know, everybody's looking for information, looking for help. And if you can help other people, and it's so easy to help somebody, especially online. You don't have to spend a lot of time. You don't have to spend any money. But if you have money to donate to causes and things that you're interested in, and it also, forms around those interests of yours.
Mm-hmm.
So you can
Absolutely.
Greatness to me means helping other people out and really just lending a hand. And if you know something, hey, don't be afraid to share it. You know, without asking for anything back. You know, just like your show. I mean, it's a fantastic show. You're providing all these different subject material to people, and it's really helping people out.
Yeah, I feel that way too, which has become my passion, because I really love to have people like you, Priceless Personality, share their stories. I'm so thrilled when you are able to tell about the difficult things, the hard things, the things you have to overcome, and especially the things you have to figure out, which is what you've done with mindset management and marketing. Those are such great tips for my listeners. We're going to take a break and hear from one of my sponsors. And when we come back with Curtis, we're going to talk about what success means to him, if he has any regrets, and what advice and what he most enjoys about his life right now. We'll be right back with Curtis Kessinger.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage, any marriage, read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage. Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
As my listeners know, I'm all for second marriages. I'm in my second marriage and will be celebrating 43 years. So it's worked out quite well for me. We're back with Curtis Kessinger. And Curtis, could you briefly describe a typical day for you?
Typical?
Okay.
No, I'm just teasing. I mean, I think it varies so much because I try to set time aside to do certain things, right? You make your plans and then, you know, something pops into my head and I have to get it out of there, of course. That's one of the keys, I think, for most people. When you have an idea, you've got to get it out of your head, get it onto paper, because then that frees up that space in your mind for other things to grow. And I believe in that 100%. Get it off your mind, get it onto paper. And so mine will vary. I try to write several hours a day. I try to exercise every day, doing something, writing. Bike riding is one of my favorites because it kind of reminds me of being a kid and just free, you know, just riding off, you know, the wind blowing.
Yeah. Oh, so. I miss it. What a wonderful memory. Now, you're also a family man, so you have to work your schedule with all of your activities, engineer, consultant, screenwriter, stand-up comic, and then fit in family time, too.
Right. That's more important than the others. You know, you really have to, and that's where I think focus comes in. When you're spending time writing, write. Don't get on your email. Don't answer the phone. Don't do other things. When you're with your family, be with your family. Don't go to dinner and get on your phone. You know, you see so many people now, they're at dinner and they're both on their phones and they're not looking at each other. They're not paying attention to the other person. They might as well be alone. And it's something I think is very sad. So you really need to be able to spend that valuable time doing the right thing. And
I agree with you completely. I think phones should be banned from family events. What does success mean to you right now at this stage of your life?
I think it really means just being able to go after whatever I want. You know, I mean, I've gotten past the point where I'm worried about embarrassing myself.
Okay, good.
I've gotten past that, you know, and I'm not worried about failing because I know I'm going to fail, but I know I'm going to learn from it and keep going. And so that's really what success is for me. It's not about, you know, having $10 billion or living in a mansion or driving a Ferrari, those things. And I've really never been tied to those things at all. It's just stuff. You know, to me, and obviously we need enough money to do the things we would like to do, but we don't need those massive amounts that you see people have and seem to waste on things that they could, you know, and I would love to get my hands on some of their money and be able to use it to help people out, you know.
Right. Now, what about regrets? When you look back, is there anything you would do differently? What are your regrets?
I definitely have some. Mainly, I think when I started the screenwriting, I was in at one of the biggest agencies in the business, and I started not for writing but for the acting side, and I really kind of started to push on the writing side with them, trying to get them to get me involved in the writing side, and I think it caused a rift there a little bit, and I would have pursued that, kept pursuing the acting side somewhat, but. But I really don't have too many regrets because I've progressed along the way enough that I feel that I wouldn't have done if I hadn't, you know, made those changes. So
exactly.
I think I look back and say, well, I've gotten to this point by switching goals, by moving on to different goals, and otherwise I might still be stuck chasing something that I didn't love 100%.
Well, what I love about you is that you're fearless and you're willing to go back and revisit things that you've done in the past. Now, when will your stand-up comedy album be out?
I'm not sure if I'm going to shoot it by the end of this year or not. And here's what I'm doing. It's my whole big plan is that I want to have at least 3 film scripts done by the time I shoot that. Because one of my goals is not really to do stand up for a living again. I still have that mindset where I want to use it to get me into the writing avenues, to get me to the film and directing roles. So I need to have enough material, because a lot of times they look at comedians and go, "Can you write?" They want you as a writer.
Yeah.
So if I walk in there and I only have one or two scripts ready, they're going to go, hey, we don't like those. What else do you have? And then I'm going, huh, I've got nothing.
Okay, gotcha.
So I want to go in there with enough material where they go, oh, my goodness, we've got to bring you on and try and get this stuff rolling. So
yeah, that's perfect because it'll be a stepping stone. And actually, most comedians who are successful do quite a bit of writing for themselves and for other people. So that's so good that you're doing that. Now, what do you enjoy most about your life today as we're speaking to each other?
I think it's just I'm a happy person. You know, I've gotten to this point.
No wine.
I don't take excuses. I don't even allow it, you know, with myself. There are no excuses. I have to keep pursuing what I want and just enjoy. I just enjoy, you know, whatever it is, the simplest things, because to me that's the key right there. Simple things. I could be outside and I see a bee landing on a flower. I'll stop and watch them, you know, just watch them work. You know, it's just the simple things like that get me excited.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about finding what makes you happy.
And, oh, absolutely.
And if I can spend some time writing, spend some time with family, spend some time doing this or that, then that's it. You know, be able to get up and
now,
do that.
When you look back, who inspired you? Who would be your hero?
I would have to first look at my father, I think, because he didn't make a lot of money. And we had six kids in a house with one bathroom, and he was the most calm person on the planet. I don't know that I would have been. I mean, so I look at him as he was always a person that was very calm, didn't get to, never saw him get angry. He was nice to everybody, no matter who they were or where they came from. He was always willing to help people out and wasn't focused on himself. And I think that was a big, you know, such a big factor to me is seeing the way he went through life.
He handled life. And your mother must have been a saint. Six kids in one bathroom. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's.
And I bet they both had terrific sense of humors, didn't they?
Yes. And that's where I think I got some of it. We were always watching Red Skelton, you know, shows like that, Ed Sullivan. So I think I picked a lot of that up from watching that. I just loved those shows as a kid.
Oh, I did too. I remember them so well. Well, you know, Curtis, time has flown by. It's been a delight having you on the show. I've been thrilled to share you with my listeners. You truly are a priceless personality. And I'm hoping to have you back in August. And we're going to talk then about your book, Just Shoot It. And we're going to share with our listeners how to make a movie from script to screen with Curtis Kessinger. We'll look forward to having you back soon.
I look forward to coming back, and that'll be a lot of fun to talk about.
Wonderful. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. My upcoming guests for the rest of the week are all eclectic, energizing, and very exciting. They will amuse, amaze, and they will astonish you. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful too. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, struggles, and secrets for success. It's our hope that we can encourage all of our listeners to emulate our guests like Curtis today and every day. Remember my mantra. If you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, I want all of you out there to please stop with the whining and then start smiling and then start sharing our success show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then you can start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Curtis Kessinger. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.